Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And to remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Exciting show today, lots to cover. PATH has announced that they found a rapid test for river blindness that will lead to a diagnosis and cures in the Bush, and to tell us about it today is Tala De Los Santos. She's the group leader for diagnostics at PATH. And then we've got a nice interview we did with Desi Patel Anderson, the chief innovative advisor at FEMA. Right after the tornado tore apart Moore, Oklahoma, we recorded the interview, and then FEMA has been sitting on it to hold up release until just now. And, of course, we'll visit the Dennis Strangers, visit our Fountain of Useless Information, and the end of the program, listener comments of the Voice of Reason. Right now, let's get to our guest. So we have today a really fun guest, Tala De Los Santos. She's with PATH, and PATH just got a nice big award from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to combat river blindness, and we want to know all about that in just a minute. Welcome to the program, Tala.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Now, before we get started on some of the other things, you're going to be a speaker at the Humanitarian Technology Conference going on in October, the 20th through the 23rd, at the San Jose Airport Garden Hotel in California. And I know you're probably going to talk about this, but before we get into it much further, can you kind of explain to the listeners exactly what PATH is all about?
Sure. PATH is an international nonprofit organization. We're headquartered in Seattle, Washington, and our mission is to improve health around the world, especially in low-resource settings. And to achieve our mission, we work on five specific platforms. These are diagnostics, devices, drugs, vaccines, and community-based interventions. My group in particular, we're focused on diagnostics. And today I'd really like to talk to you about diagnostics for neglected tropical diseases in particular.
Oh, that's great. Tell us, so where would you like to begin?
Well, let's talk a little bit about NTDs, because it's one of those diseases that, I forgot who the quote is attributed to, but it's one of those really important diseases that a lot of people don't know much about. And NTDs is a term that we apply to a group of 17 bacterial and parasitic infections that affect some of the poorest and most vulnerable people in the world. Mm-hmm. These diseases cause serious disfigurement and disability. They reduce productivity and keep people trapped in poverty. In fact, Carolyn Ansley, manager at the World Bank, prefers to refer to neglected tropical diseases not so much as neglected diseases, but diseases of neglected people. Mm. Because in terms of numbers, it's actually quite big. It's like one in six people suffer from NTDs, and that's more than a billion people, including more than 500 million children.
Wow, that's really pretty incredible when you think about it. We don't see it very much because it's hardly covered in the mainstream press. Every once in a while we'll see a story on it. And but there are apparently a lot of NTDs, neglected tropical diseases, aren't there? What are some of the prime ones that you're working on?
Well, there are several NTDs that we're working on. We're working on onchocerciasis, also known as river blindness. We're also working on lymphatic filariasis and schistosomiasis. But today I'd like to focus on river blindness. It is a very fascinating story in global health, and I think it really illustrates two points that I'd like to speak to you today and also at the GHTC conference in October. One of the points is that when we talk about global health, sometimes the numbers are so big. It's like what I said, 1 in 6 million people suffer from NTDs, more than a billion people. So some of the numbers are so big and so staggering that sometimes it's hard for us to wrap our minds around the issues, and even harder at times to really imagine how we can possibly make a dent in solving these diseases. So the story of river blindness, however, shows us that with innovative public-private partnerships, we can make a difference in changing what may seem like an insurmountable problem. So that's the first point. And secondly, the story of river blindness also shows us how, as progress is achieved in controlling diseases, the role of diagnostics becomes increasingly important as we move towards eliminating these devastating diseases.
Well, you've entered into a commercialization agreement to bring to market a rapid test for the neglected tropical disease known as river blindness, and I'm probably not pronouncing it correctly, Onchocerciasis, also known as river blindness. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It is a tough one to pronounce, Onchocerciasis. We are very excited to announce that we have entered into a commercialization agreement with a company called Standard Diagnostics.
Yeah.
And this agreement will allow us to bring to market a rapid test for river blindness, and it allows us to transfer the technology that we've developed here at PATH to Standard Diagnostics, which is a global leader in rapid diagnostics, and for them to manufacture and distribute the only antibody test for onchocerciasis for use in rural and remote settings.
Okay, now we're talking that this is an antibody test, and but does that mean that you'll be able to control and eliminate the disease? I mean, is this a cure or is it just a test?
It is a test. It is a test. And actually, this is where diagnostics is becoming more important, because the story of river blindness really started out 25, 30 years ago, if we want to move all the way back then. I mean, the disease, first of all, it's pretty big. It affects 37 million people, with an estimated like 180 million people in Africa at risk. Okay, the disease itself is caused by a parasitic worm. It's transmitted through the bite of a black fly, and the juvenile worms, otherwise known as microfilaria, they live in the skin of the human host, and they cause intense itching. And people scratch themselves so much that they cause scarring and even hypopigmentation. But the name itself, river blindness, comes from the fact that the microfilaria, or the juvenile worms, they migrate towards the eyes. And when the microfilaria die, they cause an immune response and resulting scarring of the cornea. And over time, this leads to the opaqueness of the lenses and eventually blindness of the people affected. And what's really devastating about river blindness is that it affects people who are at the prime of their lives. I mean, you have people in their 30s, 40s, 50s going blind from this disease. And in the past, you know, you would have huge areas of fertile agricultural lands near riverbeds that were abandoned for fear of this disease, because the black fly that transmits the disease,
oh, wow,
they breed in fast-flowing rivers. So not only is it having a devastating human toll on the individuals affected, you can imagine if you have huge agricultural lands that are abandoned, it has a pretty big impact on a country's GDP.
Well, if you can diagnose the disease early, before it migrates to the eyes, is the thought then that you can prevent the blindness by getting rid of the worm before it migrates that direction?
This is where we have to talk about different types of diagnostic tests. This one is really, the test that we have developed is really for what we're calling surveillance. So a little more detail about the disease and the strategy for controlling it. So people who are affected with onchocerciasis or river blindness, the strategy for controlling the disease is through mass drug administration. So ivermectin, a drug that's donated by the Merck Corporation, is given to the entire community. So if they think that the community is affected with river blindness, then they go in and they have that entire community take the medication. And they have to take it once a year, but they have to take it for 20 years. It's a really huge commitment. And the reason for that is the drug that we have available right now, and unfortunately we only have one drug available now, ivermectin, it only kills the microfilaria or the juvenile worms. They don't kill the adult worms. And these adult worms, unfortunately, they live for a very long time. They live 12 to 15 years. And basically, the communities have to keep taking the drug for that entire period of time to outlive the worm, so to speak. So you have to take it for the entire lifespan of the adult worms. And where the diagnostic test comes in is really in two aspects. First, as communities receive this drug, they can use the diagnostic test to monitor the status of transmission of the disease. And the test can help provide the evidence for when the mass drug administration can be safely stopped. That's the first. Then secondly, though, the diagnostic tool, once transmission of the disease has been halted, the diagnostic tool can also help to monitor the situation so that any early indication of reinfection can be detected, and the programs can take immediate steps so that the entire community doesn't have to restart mass drug administration all over again.
All right, so we're looking at eventual real control of this, and the only people that are really in trouble are the ones who have had it for a number of years and are fixing now to go blind, which isn't very good news for them. But tell me now, this test, do you administer it in the field with, let's say, a cell phone diagnostics, or how is it done?
Well, the test is based on the lateral flow platform, which is very much like, many people are going to be familiar with this because it's the platform that is used in pregnancy tests. So it's super simple, very, very simple platform. You just put a drop of blood, so we use a finger prick, put a drop of blood, put in a drop of buffer or so, and within 20 minutes, the test results are available, and it's a visual read. So you'll have two lines. If you are positive for having been exposed to the infection, you will see two lines of a line for the control and a line for the actual disease itself. And if you're negative, you will only see one line. So no other equipment needed. Very simple test, one drop of blood, couple of drops of buffer, wait 20 minutes, and no other equipment is needed.
Well, all right, but I mean, do they have to go into the clinic in order to have this done, or can it be done in the field, in the bush, where there isn't any clinic at all?
It is totally designed for use in the most rural and remote settings. And that was really a very big requirement of PATH when we started this project, because the people who are affected by river blindness tend to be, the term they say, the last mile or end of the road. Well, many of the people who are affected by river blindness are beyond the end of the road. So these are very rural and very remote settings that surveillance teams would have to go to in order to reach the communities. So they have to take a test that's very robust and very simple to use and deployable in the field.
Is it a large piece of equipment, or how big is this testing equipment?
These tests are really very, very small tests. You can hold one in your hand. There's no equipment required. It's really it's like a pregnancy test. It's a strip test encased in plastic, but we've designed it so that it's very robust. It can withstand high temperature, high humidity, and once the field workers use the test, after they run the test, the results will stay valid for a very long period of time.
All right. This is going to be the mainstay, then, of the things you're going to speak about to the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference when you speak to them in October. Is there another point or two that you're going to want to drive home?
Yeah, I think the other thing I wanted to talk about is, we can talk about technology, and the technology is very important, and technology is the area that I work in. But I think one of the other things that I would like to talk to at the conference is the fact that we need public-private partnerships to accomplish what we're dreaming of in terms of a public health impact.
Well, you've got a good beginning with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Where else do you think you're going to be able to find it?
Well, again, going back to the story of river blindness, it's a great story for highlighting all the different types of partnerships that we need to put together in order to achieve our public health impact.
Mm-hmm.
We have as part of the of all the different players in River Blindness, we have the company Merck, who basically is donating the drug for free. They have been doing it for over 25 years. They have donated over 1 billion tablets to date for this disease. You know, it was back in 1987 when the CEO of Merck at that time, Will Vagelos, made a stunning announcement that Merck would donate the drug to everyone who needed it for as long as it was needed. And since that time, over 1 billion tablets has been donated. Because there's such a program, a donation program in place, it spurred the creation of other organizations such as the APOC, the Onchocerciasis Control Program, and it gave rise to a similar program in the Americas. And all of these organizations sprung up in order to help deliver the drug from Merck all the way to the most remote and rural communities that need the drug. And these are the types of partnerships that we need to put in place, because Merck pretty much found out from the beginning, even though they have the technology, it takes more than just the technology to bring it all the way to the people who need it. And likewise for us at PATH, you know, and as well as our work with Standard Diagnostics, once we have the product on the market, we also need partnerships with all of these other groups in order to actually have the test be used and for it to fulfill its global health mission.
Wow, pretty exciting stuff. What have we missed? What haven't I asked you that you want to make a point of today?
Well, I think one of the, again, kind of linking to the point that technologies are critical, but they're not the only the only thing we need to reach our global health mission, is that there are really three aspects to a problem. One is the availability of the tool, second is access to the tool, and third is utilization. So availability is pretty straightforward. I mean, it is about developing your product or your tool or some kind of intervention meant to address a problem. The second concept of access, though, is about making sure that the people who want to use your product can actually get to it. So the example I just said about the MechDesign donation program, even though you have the MechDesign tool, you still needed to create all of these organizations that will essentially distribute the product to the people who need it.
Yeah.
So you need to create a distribution channel so that you can connect the people who are making the tools to the people who actually need to.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a tough one.
And that's not always an easy thing to do.
Oh, yeah, that's really got to be really, really tough. What are your plans for the doing of it?
Well, for us, it's the great thing for us is because of the fact that the MechDesign donation program has really been a pioneer in this field, our tests will go straight into the same surveillance teams that go out to distribute the drugs and the same surveillance teams that are monitoring the progress of the control of this disease. So they are our access. They are the people we are targeting and making sure that they have access to this tool. You know, so that's the second piece. I think the third piece of the whole story and how to get to your impact goal is around utilization. So it's about making sure that the people actually want to use the product. It's about creating demand. It's very different in, say, the settings in the U.S. and other countries where you have a pretty well-defined series of steps. Once you have a good product, the people will actually use it. In developing countries, you do have to create demand, and you have to work with a lot of different stakeholders and gatekeepers, because they're the ones whose opinions or policies that they put in place will determine whether the product gets taken up or not. So they're another group of people that we're working with to create these public-private partnerships to have the policies in place so that the test can be used in the field.
Do you see this as a very difficult job in the future that's going to take a long time to get done? Can you kind of put on the meditation cap for a minute and kind of look down the road and maybe give us a prediction of how, maybe when we'll master some of these things?
Well, you know, it's a hard thing to say. I think the good news for this test that we're developing is that there is widespread acceptance of the test principles, and the marker that we've put on the test is well accepted by the community, and they have been asking for this test for a long time. And those are, I would say, that's the best situation to be in. But even in a case like ours, you know, we'll have the test, we're hoping to launch the product into the marketplace late next year, in 2014, towards the end of 2014. And after a product like that is available on the market, it will probably take another anywhere from 2 years to 4 years for the different programs to try it out, to do pilot tests, demonstration studies, before they make a longer-term commitment and policy to say, yes, we need to, this product is the best product to use in all of the programs. So I would say maybe 5 years plus before we really get to the trajectory that we need for global uptake of the product.
Carla De Los Santos of PATH, a speaker at the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference by IEEE, going on October 20th through the 23rd at the San Jose Airport Garden Hotel in California. More information on that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, on the right-hand side of your screen. Carla, thanks a bunch for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Another speaker at that humanitarian conference is Desi Mattel Anderson of FEMA, and we caught up with Desi the day after the devastating tornado tore through Moore, Oklahoma, and she gave us a really wonderful interview. We just loved every bit of it, but FEMA wouldn't allow the release of it right away. They wanted to sit on it and look it over and dissect it in one thing or another, and Desi and I both tried to tell FEMA that, you know, transparency is a big thing with government agencies. We need to release the news. But they waited, and so this is only now that we've been able to get to it. But to their great credit, they didn't ask us to edit anything or take anything out. And I think you'll like it. Listen in.
Actually, I am just outside the National Response and Coordination Center at FEMA headquarters right now. But we do have folks from FEMA and folks from the innovation team down on the ground.
Okay, so you're in D.C., is that right?
I am, yes.
Bring us up to date. What sort of response was there to the Moore tornado, and where are we right now, 24 hours later?
We're dealing with the tornado, and just to kind of give you a concept of what happened, so we stood up the NRCC, the National Response and Coordination Center, at FEMA headquarters yesterday, and I'll give you kind of an understanding of how I work. So I don't really necessarily belong in the National Response Coordination Center, because most people would say that innovation has its place, but it doesn't have its place in response and recovery. And I've been told that many, many of times. But I can tell you that I think that theory is completely debunked after Sandy, where we deployed an innovation team down. So that's what I did. And we started to do some really cool things. And it's been a sleepless night. Today is going to be another sleepless day and night. But I can continue to do great things and spread the word that we can innovate in response and recovery. Let me talk from an innovation lens, because that is where I'm focused. But one of the great things about what we've been able to do is once we activated the National Response and Coordination Center, we were able to actually get our folks catalyzed and start talking about how we can not just take new technologies, but new systems thinking, designs, processes that we had been catalyzing and folks had ideas on, and see if we could implement it real time in response and recovery. So we had our team circulating yesterday afternoon, right after the tornado struck, to see where we could help most. And from that, and maybe a bit of a sleepless night, we continue to be there, helping to assist, ready to offer some assistance and ready to go and deploy. We've had a couple of great pieces and partnerships going on. We've been connecting a couple of folks up in regards to looking at some thermal imagery and potential robotics on the ground to assist, because there's obviously a lot of debris. And that's with our partners at Texas A&M and the USAR teams at FEMA and many, many others, private sector partners who've been in assistance with this. So that's really, really neat.
Okay, I need you to hold that thought for a minute while we take a break and be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Han and Ayn Rand. Objectivism tells you that you must not accept any idea or conviction unless you can demonstrate its truth by means of reason. faith, as such, is extremely detrimental to human life. It is the negation of reason.